All right.
Hello and welcome to episode 28 of the First and Gold podcast. I am Ben Roberts, joined with, by Sim Longa. And Sim, it got interesting at Mackey Arena last weekend, a true test to say the least, one where probably some swear words were said by everybody watching. But in the end, the Boilermakers came out on top thanks to a Trey Kaufman Wren bucket late. They ended up winning 81 to 76. And we had kind of talked about, even though IU have been struggling, it was a rivalry game. Throw all the stats out the window, and give credit to IU because they really came to play. And they gave Purdue really everything that they could handle Friday night.
Yeah, I mean they say that in a rivalry games that like you throw out the records, because obviously like it's just when you understand what the history and whatnot is, if one team's having kind of a down year, they oftentimes will play up. And yeah, just I think that's what we saw, and I thought that's what we saw to an extent on Friday. I don't know about you, I wasn't really worried. No. But no, it was yeah, it was definitely stressful. I mean, it was a gritty game. It was definitely another like kind of ugly game for us. I mean, we didn't shoot well from the three, but the fact that we were able to, to be able to execute down the stretch, I think that's been something that has become more and more of a thing for this team, is that like even when it gets tight late, their ability to be able to execute, and at least I'd say at least get good shots. You can go all the way back to, I think, like the Ole Miss game, where you just have a you have it's kind of back and forth down the stretch, you lose the lead, you're trailing, you have to execute, you have to get stops at the time, at the hour it matters, when it's time to get stops and or to make plays, we've been finding ways to do so. And so that's that's definitely reassuring. But yeah, I mean, it was stressful. I know I had a couple of extra glasses of whiskey to help steady the nerves down the stretch, and I'm thankful for that. My body hated me the next day, but that's okay. Yeah, it's just at the end of the day, it's always nice to beat IU too, so.
Yeah, and to your point, Purdue outscored IU 20-9 in the last 5 minutes to overcome what was at the time a 6-point deficit. And it was kind of like where there's been games in the past like this where Purdue has been down at half or kind of let things kind of slip away like early or midway through the second half. But this team like just does not panic, man. They are so, at least what it seems to be, so calm. And I think part of that is, you got guys like Braden Fletch who, have been through literally everything, and kind of know what to expect. But as a fan kind of watching, it's almost like you don't panic as much. I'm not gonna say that you do panic because like you, I was going through the adult beverages also, but you also just kind of have like this sense of like, all right, well, we got them right here. Now is about when we're gonna make our run.
Right. Yeah, man. It's just, yeah, I just, again, yeah, just the fact that you have, and I think that points to more so to the leadership between, Fletch, Braden, and TKR, just three guys who and even Caleb, three guys who've been through so much. And like, I think, I'm sorry for repeating you, by the way. But just, I think Braden even said afterwards that they're comfortable in those moments. And that's, yeah, that just there's a lot to be said about that, because that's not something you just kind of learn overnight. I think that composure and that execution, that being able to lock in at those hours, I think that just happens over time. So while it might be wildly stressful for us, and profitable for, local liquor stores, it is proving beneficial for Purdue.
And it was a very kind of different game. I feel like Purdue really hasn't won a game like this at home, I feel like, where they really did not shoot the ball well at all. 2 of 13 from three. Braden played well, but had 6 turnovers. He finished with 24 points on 21 shots. So, he wasn't ripping the nets, but he played well. But it's not like, like games like Michigan game where they just came out and, went from jump. It was a very kind of different style of game. They struggled to rebound. Let kind of IU stick around, especially early on with the offensive rebounding. They still, were able to turn IU over and get some easy buckets, which really, came in handy from like how they shot. But, it was just kind of an interesting game where they took everything that IU gave them and just had one more counter punch at the end almost.
Yeah, I mean, like you were mentioning in the first half, and especially the rebounding, there were I think a couple possessions where IU got like two, three looks, and then ended up like, and I think both times it resulted in a three, and I think they came back after a timeout, and like that was like they were playing the audio from the timeout, on the broadcast, and that was like the first thing Payne was talking about. He was like, "Bro, like, are we planning on rebounding?" Because he was like, we're giving them two and three chances, and they're resulting in like wide open threes at the end of it. Like, we can't be doing that. And like you said, like it was the I think the fact that we were able to turn them over so much is the reason why that halftime lead wasn't as bad as it could have been. Because that game too, I don't know about you, but it had some OSU vibes to it. It had some Ohio State vibes to it in terms of Mbako was starting to get like he was getting cooking. It was 10 of 7. He ended up having 25 points, but between him and then Balo and then like Luke Good was hit. He hit a couple threes, and I was just sitting there thinking like, oh man, like are we really about to do this again? And especially like with the way that they were seemingly out hustling us on the boards, but it was just kind of like, man, like please don't let this be the case all over again. But then. They went in that locker room, and I don't know what Payne said, but they came out and they were like, "Yeah, we're gonna have to turn this around right now. We're rather just." And it was more of this. I felt like we started to match their intensity. It wasn't necessarily even that we were all of a sudden. Obviously, it's not like we came out and just got hot from three. It felt like we came out and we just matched their we matched their intensity. We matched their energy, and obviously at times I think it was even we even kind of had the edge.
And they really attacked the paint also in that second half. I just think when they first came out and Trey gets the and one on the first play, and that really kind of set the tone. And then I think it might have been the next time down or the time after, there's a loose ball and CJ Cox is down there and he gets the rebound and the put back on the offensive glass. And it was just kind of like those plays kind of really felt like they set the tone of kind of we gotta bring our game because IU brought theirs. So, we gotta answer the call. And man, talking about answering the call, I don't think you can talk about say enough good things of the game that Trey had. 10 of 13 from the field, man, made all three of his free throws, 23 points. He and that was in between foul trouble too. He wasn't really able to get in much of a rhythm, especially in the second half because of those two offensive fouls they got him for. And then with the game on the line, you're down 1:20 seconds left, and he gets like the little hook shot from it. I
It was
don't
from a
know if
pretty good
Trey knew
distance.
he wasn't as close to the basket as he thought he was when he took that shot, but it worked. It went in, and shout out to him, man. That's got to be a good feeling for a guy who was recruited heavily by Purdue and IU. It came down to those two schools, and to be able to kind of hit like not quote unquote the game winning shot, but to hit that big shot at the end and then to knock down the two free throws at the end too, that's got to feel good for Trey.
Yeah, man, he splashed them two at the end. Yeah, he splashed those two at the end. But like you said, he played so well when he, when he wasn't, despite the foul trouble. And it was, I think he played, what did he, correct me if I'm wrong, he played at least like the last, what, six minutes or something like that with those four fouls. So I mean, he had to really be smart when he was out there on the floor, and especially for the way that he picked up the third and the fourth foul. You know, they're talking about those offensive fouls. You know, it just it only takes one thing to go wrong. You know what I mean? Like it just takes one like a deflection or something like that, and it's a loose ball, and all of a sudden you're in the wrong place. And then boom, he could have picked up his fifth real easy. So I mean, we're fortunate for that. But like you said, I mean, he had 26, yeah, 20, excuse me, 23 points in 26 minutes. He was 10 of 13. Really got things going in that second half, and spearheaded the charge. I mean, he had the highest plus minus of anyone who played at 21. Yeah, it's just. Kind of shows you one just how good he's been as of late, and really the entire season. But I think also too, it just if you didn't already know, just how important he is to what we do. You know, that game on Friday was a prime example of that, of just like how him being in the game and how it just allows us to do what we do offensively, and it kind of makes life easier for everyone else. Obviously, it's different from what from the force that Zach was last year, but this is still pretty damn good post play and a good post presence.
Yeah, and it kind of felt like kind of like a statement game from Trey also. You know, obviously Brayden's been getting a lot of the talk and well deserved, you know, for like, you know, getting himself back in like the Big Ten Player of the Year and All American talks. And it almost felt like a game where Trey was like, hey guys, don't forget about me either. 'Cause, you know, it's starting to get to the point where we gotta have a talk about Trey being an All American. Because like just what he does night in, night out on a consistent basis, man, like his numbers are starting to get to where like you can't really like discredit what he's doing. Like you gotta start putting a lot of attention, both like for first team All Big Ten, but also like national wise. Also.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's definitely gonna be a converse. I mean, he continues to play like this, you'll definitely get more of a more talk at the national level, and obviously with some of the award midseason award listings that are coming out, like he's still I won't say midseason, but the some of the awards announcements that came out, he's very clearly starting to get that recognition. I also think too, you can look at the box score and see like, man, okay, he had a good game, but if you watch the game too, you can see just how like. How well he's been playing. I think that the eye test, obviously it corroborates what you're seeing there in the stat sheet, man. He's been so good. He's been so good. And you know, last year everyone was talking about he's going to be the person who benefits the most. And I know for myself, I was trying to kind of like temper my expectations of like, man, but like what would he be able to do? And I was kind of hoping like, hey, if he's able to just get us, 12, 14 a game, that would be fine. But it feels like we're having more conversations of him being at like 23, 21, 26, stuff like that. And that's not just kind of like regular. That's very much so player of the year type performances night in and night out.
Yeah. So a really, really good game from him. Also wanted to just highlight, man, and we've been talking about him recently, how like it feels like he's kind of turned the page. And really happy to see him, you know, see this success that he's seeing. And that's Jakari Harris. Finished with a career high 9 points. Obviously the big block on the last play of the game, but man, he hit some shots that just were like felt very important. Like the three he hit, I think it was only three we hit in the first half. And then the bucket right before halftime were just two big shots. And you know, it's you're really starting to see him kind of just, I think, get more comfortable. And you know, when we talked at the start of the season, we talked about how he was a scorer. He was the Metro Atlanta player of the year. So we knew the dude could ball. And you just didn't see it starting off. He had some good looks and they just couldn't go down. But man, he's starting to shoot the ball really well, and you can just see that confidence just growing.
Yeah, man, I felt like I agree with you. Those the two shots that he hit, like the three to me was beautiful. I mean, like we were talking about it before we got on here, but like he had the ball top of the key, pump fakes, the guy goes flying, and he just calmly steps to the side, takes a dribble, loads up, shoots it, splash, and then yeah, that bucket at the end of the half, that was kind of like it was, if I'm remembering it right, it was more of like a scramble situation. He has to kind of go and just, he has to get out the DIY kit, and he's able to make that tough jumper, and it takes the lead down to four. But like those to me were two really big shots. Also, he went 4 of 4 from the line. I just think, yeah, like I think it's been this way. We've been seeing it really since probably like I think like the Minnesota game. But the game looks like it has been slowing down for him. Like he really is kind of processing things in real time. Something I think also is worth note is that in the 21 minutes that he played, he didn't have any fouls. And for the way that him and even CJ only had one foul himself, but for the way that those two defend and how they will pick guys up essentially 94 feet to not have any fouls for a freshman. I think that's I like that like again I think that's showing the fact that it's really starting to come together for him on both sides of the ball, which again is great because as we talk about episode in and episode out, whoever wants to be that four scorer, that's fine. And when you have a guy who has we can call it somewhat of a breakout game, now you look at him and it's like, all right, well, as FC continues to figure it out, can he be a guy who can come out one night and maybe give you 15? Because he has a game where he comes out and gives you 15, and now all of a sudden it's like, oh, okay, snap. Like, yeah, he really is capable of maybe taking more of a leap. And also too, I mean, like just from the way that he played, you can tell that the coaches are starting to trust him more because he played more than CJ and Miles. And I don't think that was something we were saying, hell, I'd say probably what, 3 weeks ago?
Yeah, and I mean, just look at the last play of the game.
Yeah.
Payne trusted him to be on the floor late. Obviously he rewarded him with the big play, which, still I don't think was a foul at all. He went straight up. To your point, like if Payne doesn't trust him, he's not on the floor
Right.
with that last play.
Right. And I think that's big, man, because there was a, he was going through some of the a case of the freshmens earlier this year where it was just you could kind of see it felt like maybe it was a lot for him to process. And it is. I mean, it's major college, it's Big Ten basketball. Like that's not going to be our schedule even in the non-con, it wasn't some like cupcake schedule. So yeah, there were going to be growing pains there, but it seems as though for all the stuff that he's gone through to this point, he has been able to kind of process and understand, and the development has been happening. So again, just like with him, or whether it's CJ or if it's Miles or Cam, when they have one good game, that's great. Obviously, we're gonna appreciate that in the moment, but it's kind of like, well, can we get more out of this now? Can we start to see more of this? Can we continue to see this type of consistency out of him? Because if so, again, it makes you feel better going forward in terms of what this team's ceiling is. If you can get guys who are coming off the bench and able to give you upwards to 10 points, that goes a long way.
Now we just want to see, like you say, can he build on it, and really start to kind of solidify himself as almost the guy, like the first guy off the bench right now.
Right.
But we'll see. I did also just, I gotta give my Braden stat for the podcast. We joke that each week there's some ridiculous new stat that Brain does. So I got a couple this week here. It's just kind of like half joke, half serious. But man, like it's pretty wild that we can come on week in, week out and have a new stat for Braden, like stuff that nobody else is really doing. But for this week's, Braden scored 24 points, 7 assists, 6 steals, becoming the second player nationally this season to reach that. And the first, like, power, I guess you can't even call it power five, but the first major conference player to do that. The only other time that happened this season, Devin Askew from Long Beach State did it against Hawaii. So, you know, not only does he do that, but let's talk about how he just blitzed through the month of January. 158 points, 82 assists, and 28 steals in 9 games. The first player of this century, men or women, to have reached 150 points, 80 or more assists, 25 or more steals in any month. So just wild stuff. And then, you know, just to kind of put a bow on those, he now has 639 career assists, which moved him past Mateen Cleaves for second for the most assists by a Big Ten player in their first 3 seasons. Number one is Cassius Winston with 714. So Braden's got a shot at that. One his 639 assists are already tied for 14th most in Big Ten history. And then just one last stat. When Braden Smith surpasses 20 points in his Purdue career, Purdue is 12-0. So, you know, I don't think there's not enough stats that you can talk about that, like, talk about how well he is playing right now. He's just on a whole nother level. And I think the one thing that people are really going to have to start giving him credit for now is he's doing it on the defensive end too, man. Like, he is becoming a menace, with steals, and leading those to fast break points. And much like how we said, you know, Trey is starting to get talks into, like, you know, is starting to put himself into All-American talks. Braden is starting to put himself into Defensive Player of the Year talks.
Man, he's getting so many steals. He probably should have been on the football team last year, you know. I mean, shit, he probably would have more pick sixes than the team had touchdowns, respectfully. but no, I mean, the fact that stat you mentioned about the assists, I wasn't aware of that. That's pretty crazy. And I actually think you can make a case too that the number that he has could actually be greater. You think about the games where he's had 8, 9, 10 assists, and even the games where it might have been like 12 or 13, and there's usually been a handful that have been left out there. I mean, we shot 2 of 13 against IU from three. I imagine that there's probably a few assists in those in some of those misses. So he could actually be, you know, be closer to who'd you say it was? Who's number one?
Cassius Winston.
Cassius Winston, yeah, he could probably be closer to Cassius if we're being completely honest. But yeah, I mean, there's enough games to where yeah, he could genuinely catch him. And yeah, like you said, every week come on here and it's just yeah, we've done a good like yeah we I think feel like most of the time we've been talking more about his offensive accolades and with good reason because he's been impacting the game in so many ways. But yeah, the defensive side of it, I mean, it just. He just seems to be like a magnet for the ball. I mean, the only knock I had on him about from this last game was just the fact that he had 6 turnovers. But even that, we were talking about it off air. I was kind of like, well, I don't know if those were actually 6 of his. Like, I don't remember him having 6 like that. But he's been really good defensively, man. He's been really, really good defensively, and that can't be, like you said. I'm glad you're calling it out because that can't be overlooked. And you think too about the minutes that he's logging. And to you know the way that he's filling the stat sheet and being so productive on both sides of the ball, it's really, really impressive. And he's having a special season, whether it's being talked about at a larger scale or not. I feel like this was going to be one where if you're not talking about it at the end of the year, you're going to look back and see like he set a lot of these like single season records, or even on the career ranks, he's put himself in position to where you're like, wait, how the hell did this happen? And then you're going to realize like, oh shit, last year he was really out here being a fucking menace.
Yeah. And it's kind of wild to think, like, if you think about the National Player of the Year race right now, you got Cooper Flagg, who's been, this highly touted recruit who's been talked about for years already, like, already going to be the number one pick, all of this. You have him. You have Jani Broome, who's a fifth year senior, kind of flew under the radar, but has played really well. And then you got Brayden Smith, a 5'10" guard from Westfield, Indiana. He just, he doesn't kind of fit the mold of the guys, that are kind of in that talk. But man, like, you can't deny what he's doing.
I think the only, they've been making it seem like, I was watching over the weekend, they're making it seem like it's only between Broom and Flag, and I mean those two guys have had they've had great seasons themselves, but Peru gets streaking here and
I will say the thing that's really going to hurt Brayden is that he played with the two-time National Player of the Year already. So I think there's going to be bias against anybody from Purdue, like probably
there's
not going to want to give it a third year in a row, which, kind of sucks for Brayden. And I get it, like, from a national like level, but man, if he keeps doing what he's doing, man, like, these numbers are just insane, and he's literally one of like two guys in the country doing all these stats. Like, it's
He could,
just
I mean, he
insane,
could,
man.
he might, I mean, yeah, like you said, like the winning National Player of the Year would have been like, even going into this year, would have been a tall order, no pun intended. It would have been a tall order for Braden this year. And like you said, like there might be a bit of like Purdue fatigue, because obviously for the last 2 years, well, especially the last year, we were hearing, oh, but he's just tall, and people saying that like that Edie wasn't worthy of it, whatever. So like, yeah, there might be a bit of Purdue fatigue when it comes to the National Player of the Year conversation, but man, like I think it's probably a no-brainer that Braden's being talked about, at least at being on first team All-American, because to do these to put be putting up these numbers, and like we said, been reading these stats off week in and week out, and doing it in a major conference, that can't be overlooked. Obviously the win-loss record kind of has to be there, and we're still, I mean, it's okay right now. Obviously if we had a few less losses, I think he probably is being mentioned even more a bit more so. But yeah, I definitely think he's playing at an All-American level. You talk about people, I feel like All-Americans are not just people, I mean they're guys who are like the driving force of their team, and especially if they're overachieving. And I feel like Braden is the driving force of what we're doing, and he's a significant part of why we are at where we're at.
Totally agree there. And he's gonna have, obviously, more ch chances to kind of, update his resume, so to speak. As there's some big games here in the month of February. And as we kind of look ahead to not only the game against Iowa, but also USC, did just kind of want to talk about just the Big Ten standings in general now as we turn into February. And this is kind of where, you start to see who the contenders are, and teams start to kind of separate themselves. And it seems like it's really a three-team race right now between Purdue, Michigan State, and Michigan. Michigan State kind of opened up the door with that loss against USC out in LA over the weekend. That was a big loss for them, especially for the games that they have coming up. I almost wonder if that kind of like is a, not like an energy boost, but kind of like a boost for a team like Purdue, who was down two games in the loss column. And to see them finally get that L after they've won like 10 in a row, I think it was. And it's like, all right, now like it's business time. Kind of curious to, obviously see what's going to play out. But Sim, I think you would agree that right now it kind of seems like it's a three-team race.
Yeah, I was going to say between Michigan State, Purdue, and Michigan, that seems to be where this seems like this is headed between those three down the stretch. And like you said, there's a, Michigan State losing, that was a big loss, because now there's just that game that's separating us. And so obviously, we have to do our part and continue to win the games that we're supposed to. But yeah, I mean, I think for the guys, if you're, I think every year we go in trying to win the Big Ten regular season, but this was kind of like a gift that you got, and so you don't want to try to fumble that. And that's why I think tomorrow is important to go out and just kind of consolidate that that break that you got. I didn't mean to make a tennis analogy there, but like, but yeah, to take advantage of that. Obviously, you still have to go back to Michigan. I think Michigan and Michigan State have not played at all this year, and they have to play twice. So, there can be some wreckage there, and you could, if things play out the right way, you could find yourself, headed towards the latter part of the season with a real chance of winning. But there'd be three straight, wouldn't it? Oof,
Yep,
yeah.
3-peat is right there. And it sounds super cliche, but like you just gotta win the game that's in front of you, man.
It
Like,
really is, man.
you really can't take anything for granted, especially on the road. This game against Iowa is gonna be interesting because it feels like just a couple weeks ago we were saying, well, now Purdue finally, returns home. Well, now the flip side of that is now they got to go back on the road. I think I saw it'll be their first road game in like 17 days.
Oh, sucks.
That always kind of worries you a little bit. And then, Carver Hawkeye is never an easy place to play. Iowa can, score with the best of them. Obviously, with the injury to Owen Freeman, that kind of, I won't say makes the game easier, but you feel a little better headed into this game. But these games on the road, man, like, and just the games like in February and even in March, once you get into tournament time, just win the game that's in front of you.
Yeah, no, I think this is another game like what, Minnesota before it, and excuse me, Minnesota and Washington, where if you say you're the team that you are, like, you know what I mean, in terms of the team you're aspiring to be, this is a game that you have to win. Like you said, was Owen Freeman getting, being out for the rest of the year, that's significant. But I think if you're listening to this and you've watched Purdue for any amount of time, this is the perfect storyline for some unknown or some guy playing off the bench to come in and have a career game. And if you're Purdue, it shouldn't take down your it shouldn't make you relax your shoulders. It should be You should still have that heightened sense of urgency of like, nope, like, we're not gonna look at this team like they're a wounded animal. Like, we're gonna play them like we're gonna approach them like they're playing at like fully staffed. And also too, it's a road game, and you're a top 10 team. So even if like the season was bad for them, this is going to be a game where people will show up. Like, the fans will show up. It'll be loud in there. And like you said, that building can get loud, and they can score. And so if you come out and you're a little, you come out slow, you find yourself down double digits real quick. And that's not the type of environment where you want to be trying to claw your way back. And especially with the way we've been shooting the three ball as of late, Michigan game aside, you're not going to be able to necessarily, come back from a significant deficit. So this is definitely a game where you, like you said, you just win it. You find a way to have more points at the end of it, because that's all that matters at the end of the day. Now you're just trying to rack up the wins. You're just trying to make sure that you're racking them up one after one after one, and this falls in that category.
And this one, and then USC on Friday in Mackey, these games feel massive only because like if you start looking ahead after the USC game, man, there is a massive four-game stretch in which Purdue travels to Ann Arbor to play Michigan, comes back home to play Wisconsin, and then hits the road to play at East Lansing, and then goes to that school down south to take on IU. Just a massive four-game stretch right there. And that's why these two games I feel like are just vital, because you already stubbed your toe once with the Ohio State game. You really can't afford another slip up in a game, in games where you, quite frankly, you
You
should
should
win.
win, right?
I'm never gonna say, oh well, it's gonna be an easy cakewalk game, but these are two games where, like you said, if you want to get to where we think they can be at the end of the year, no matter what happens, how you do it, just come out of this week 2-0.
Right. You don't have to cover the spread. You just got to make sure that money line bet is secure. Yeah, I agree. You just have to find a way, because I like you mentioned that four game stretch. That four game stretch is going to be what tells you whether or not Purdue is going to have a true say in winning the Big Ten regular season. And these two games that you mentioned, they set you up to be in like a, hey, look, if they mess around and that, like if they win these two, you know, you're 11-2. And then if you go through that next stretch, and let's just say that stretch of four, if you mess around and go 3-1, you could really, really put yourself in a good position, you know, to win another Big Ten championship. And so yeah, I mean, like this game, excuse me, the Iowa game, the USC game, they're just two games that if you are who you say you are, you have to win them. Doesn't really matter how. Although we would take the style points. Also, like we said before the IU game, and I don't think the message got through, but like if you guys want to win by like 30, that's straight as well. Like that's never not okay.
It's always even better against Iowa, so we can see Fran just go
That's very
bananas.
true.
So
Yeah, yeah.
if there's ever a team to blow out, it's always Iowa, man, because I am ready to see Fran just go bonkers
If it can't, yeah, if it can't be IU, then make sure, yeah, then Iowa's
on the
a nice consolation.
sidelines. But that game will tip off on Tuesday, February 4th. It is a 7 p.m. Eastern tip-off that is on Peacock. And then the Boilermakers will return to Mackey Arena, like we said, Friday, February 7th, to take on USC. That game will be on FS1. I believe that's their third straight Friday game. But like we just said, they just knocked off Michigan State, so it's not a team that you can take lightly. But it's teams that you should handle your business with. And we as fans can look ahead and talk about that big four game stretch. But the players, obviously can. And even if you watch the video that Purdue basketball made, and shout out to the Purdue creative team, because every time they do a video, it is just awesome. And they killed it again with the IU one. And at the very end, you'll see Fletch as the team is all huddled in the locker room, and he's immediately talking about getting ready for Iowa and how it's going to be a tough game. So you got to believe that the players are going to be ready. And they can see the goals, I think, now at the end of the light there, like where it's starting to get realistic. But you gotta handle your business.
Yeah, goals at the end of the light. Yeah, no, I think, yeah, I think the light is at the end of the tunnel. I think I can see that. But yeah, like I caught that part of the end of the video for what do they call it, the Indiana movie. Yeah, where Fletch was very clear about like, yo, we got a big one coming up on Tuesday. So it was kind of like, yeah, we'll enjoy this, but like, guys, like everyone needs to be focused in and locked in for this next game. And you like that. You like the fact that that's the message that's going out there. So we're not sitting there resting too much on our laurels. You know, after obviously, you know, like we said at the top, always nice to beat your in-state rival. Always nice. But we've got bigger goals. And so like you can't get over the moon about that because they should have expected to win and they did win, albeit maybe not in the way that they thought they would or hoped they would. But yeah, now it's on to Iowa, and then you know hopefully they go into Iowa on Tuesday and they take care of business there, and then from there it immediately shifts to USC. So that's just like you said. I think it almost feel like in that statement he kind of pointed to what you said earlier, where you guys have to take the game that's in front of you, the game that's in front of you. And once that game's over, all right, cool. Then the next game is the game that's in front of you.
Yeah, so you know, it may not be the two biggest opponents this week, but it feels like two really big games, just to kind of build on the two game winning streak that they're on, and hopefully kind of build to what you know what they want to be doing at the end of the year, and hopefully that's winning a Big Ten championship. But either way, no matter what happens, like always, Sim and I will be here to break everything down. Again, Tuesday, February 4th, 7 p.m. tip off. That game was on Peacock. And then on Friday the 7th, a also 7 p.m. tip. That game is on FS1. So hopefully we will be talking about a 2-0 week. But either way, we will be here to break everything down. Hopefully have some new brain stats for you as well. Once again, want to thank everybody for listening. Want to thank everybody for interacting with us on Twitter. Had a lot of fun during the IU game with that. So thank you, everybody. And most importantly, a boiler up.
Yes, sir.